The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. She got a natural way, her hips sway furiously. Yeah, luxuriously, carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you see this side of the bay.
Hey! This is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head and what we're loving and hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, where I'm at with Insecure this week, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are on Rona lockdown. It's a weird time, a scary time. It's all the kinds of time, but don't worry. We are going to help you pass the time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99 because we know that stimulus check, it's got to last.
All the clerks want to offer your help. All the folks compliment your style. Our little children want to jump in your lap. Girl, I want to do that myself.
My guest this week got her start teaching courses on writing and social change at Howard University. Since then, she's trained human rights activists in Australia, done strategy for organizations like Planned Parenthood, the Women's March, and MSNBC, and ran a training program for political operatives the Washington Post called the Hogwarts of the Democratic Party. That is boss business. She formerly explored feminist activism with the 2 million listeners of her podcast, Stuff Mom Never Told You. That's bomb. 2 million listeners. Y'all better get with this. She produced a global salon with Afropunk, a music and culture festival that hosted amazing people like Angela Davis, Ava DuVernay, and Me Too creator Tarana Burke. She is the founder of Unbossed Creative, a media company that makes podcasts and other digital content to push the needle on social change. Her new podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet, debuts on iHeartRadio on July 7th. Please help me welcome to Lady Don't Take No, the one, the only, the amazing Bridget Todd.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm stoked to have you. And Bridget, it's great to have you on the pod today. And I feel like we've gotten to do a lot of cool stuff together through Afropunk and Color of Change, but we actually haven't gotten to do that Black girl Kiki that I've been craving. So that's what I want to get into today.
I can't wait. And the last time I saw you was at Sundance, which, by the way, talking to you at the Sundance Film Festival was a highlight of my 2020. I don't think I'll have a moment that's happier or more joyous. So thank you for being part of that. That was one of the highlights of my life.
Oh, it was such a joy. And I absolutely loved it. And frankly, I'm not a big fan of Sundance, but that moment for me, sitting with you and Kendrick and talking politics and Black folks is like what I want to do with my whole life all the time. So thank you for inviting me. It was super cool. So look, the elephant in the room here is that we're all on quarantine. And even though some people are wiling out talking about their version of their new civil rights movement is to like fight for their right to like get a haircut. The reality is we are on quarantine. And I'm just curious, like, what has your quarantine life been like? Are you developing any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
Well, my quarantine has been interesting. I think a lot like everybody else, it's been a real adjustment, particularly the staying at home aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I was always someone who, you know, was always going somewhere, traveling somewhere, up to something. And, you know, as much as I dislike the changes that I've had to make in my life, staying home and like wondering about all of this like terrible suffering going on in the world, I have to say it has kind of forced me to pause and really think about what I want to have in my life, what I don't want to have in my life. you know, I have nothing but time on my hands, right? So it's like I'm doing a lot of thinking about my life. And so that part's been sort of interesting. In terms of habits, just like everybody else, I've gotten very, I was already really into gardening and plants. And now it's like I live in a jungle. If you could see my apartment, it's like plants everywhere. Gotten really into cooking. I feel like the two big things for me in the quarantine have been cooking and plants.
Ooh, okay. So tell me, how many plants do you have? Because I am also a plant mama.
Inside my apartment, I probably have, I would say, 30.
Ooh,
outside excellent. Of my apartment, I have not counted, but it's getting, I have a little like deck area and it's getting a little out of control. It's a little out of hand, but I can't help it. I just feel like it cultivates a peace and, you know, it's what we need right now.
I agree. And, you know, I was talking to a mentor of mine the other day and she was like, you know what it is about gardening is it in this time where you feel like everything is out of control, your garden is something that you can control. It
yes.
is a puzzle that is actually able to be solved. You know what to do if a plant is starting to wilt. You start to think, am I watering it too much or am I watering it too little? There's like real tangible things that you can do to fix it.
Absolutely.
And that's different than what's going on in our world.
Exactly. I have this weird routine. My partner makes fun of me all the time where when I water the plants, I also drink water. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, yes. you know, hydrating myself. Like everyone gets water. Everyone gets a drink. Hydrating myself, yes. hydrating the plants. It brings me such calm.
I'm so into this. And tell me, what are you cooking these days?
Oh, well, I would say it's a lot of experimentation, mm-hmm. a lot of following Chrissy Teigen recipes and then adding my own spin on them.
Yes. Yes.
I think tonight we're doing probably roasted lamb. I think we have some lamb
Ooh.
Thawing in the sink as we speak. Yeah, it's a lot of experimentation because I feel in this time of pausing on life, I have so few outlets to really feel like I'm creating. You know, these days during the day, I'm like doing stuff to make money. And it's like the time that I used to have to sort of just play with stuff myself. Now that's cooking. Now that's doctoring up a recipe from Chrissy yeah. Teigen and making it my own, that kind of thing.
I'm feeling her recipes, BTW, and I'm also feeling all the shade she gives us on these interwebs. She's giving me everything. I want to know more about you. I want to know how you grew up. I want to know, how did you get to be Bridget Todd, cultural curator and politico extraordinaire? Like, did you grow up in a family that was political or did you just come out the womb as a boss? Like, how did we get here?
That's a great question. It's sort of, I mean, I think I've asked you a similar question and I really felt your answer. I felt very sort of connected to you from your response. I wouldn't say that I grew up in a family that was sort of always inherently political, but politics was always something that was informing our lives, whether or not it was kind of explicitly talked about in that way. And so, you know, I don't think my parents would think of themselves as people who were, you know, necessarily the most political, but it was definitely clear to me that social change and values and all of those things like were informing our everyday lived lives. And so I feel like even from a very early age, that was informing my understanding of the world around me. So I grew up from the D.C. area, which is where I am right now. Shout out to the 202.
Represent. Shout out.
But, you know, when we were real little, we moved to a small town in Virginia. And so it was a very white town. We were sort of that black family in a very white suburb. And mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time when I was growing up, and I almost like hate to admit this, when I was very young, I so desperately wanted to be just like everybody else. You know, when I was 13, 14 in junior high, I didn't understand that it was all of these different cultural things and cultural attitudes that made us beautiful and different. At the time, I just wanted to disappear. I just wanted to be like everybody else. And so at that point in my life, I spent a long time trying to just sort of blend in, wanting so badly to have nobody notice me. But you know what? When you're a marginalized person, when you're black, when you're queer, you know, you don't really always have that option. You can't necessarily blend in. And so as I got older, I became so grateful that my parents were the kind of people who wanted to foster that sense of pride and wanted us to have conversations that were tough and wanted us to make waves if that's what you had to do to make a change for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that was something that really related to like where I am today, you know, being someone who does the hard thing or has the conversation that is a little uncomfortable if it's going to make change.
You know what? This is excellent and right on, because I relate in all the ways. You know, a couple of months ago, a journalist homie of mine got in a lot of trouble by referring to a Sanders campaign staffer as a misfit Black girl.
And I remember that.
That ended up kind of like trending across social media. You remember. And so without getting into the mess that that was, because that was a mess, I know personally, I've grown to embrace, as you've said, my misfit Black girlhood. I also grew up around Black folks for part of my life and white folks for part of my life. And I never totally felt like my Blackness could really be contained in the boxes that some of us tried to put each other in. And like you, I think I really came to like find peace in all of the ways in which I had to learn how to appreciate being different and standing out. And it wasn't just around Blackness. It was about being queer. It was about wearing what I want and saying what I want and doing what I want, right? So I just wonder, like, do you ever feel like it's time for us to embrace this identity of misfit Black girls? And I don't know. I almost kind of feel like we should have our own Bill of Rights, like the right to be free of other people's expectations of what Blackness is. So let me know. Do you feel like there should maybe be like a misfit Black girl agenda? And if so, what would you put on it?
Oh my God. I'm snap. You can't see it because it's a podcast. I'm snapping my fingers furiously right now. Yeah. I remember when that misfit Black girls thing happened, and I felt the same way. I do think, listen, something that I had to unpack and learn as I got older was that there are so many different ways to be Black, and that, you know, it's the same with you. Like, I had so many anxieties, not just about being a Black woman, but being someone who was very tall and like awkward looking, like all of the things that it took, like I had to learn how to unpack and deal with and make peace with all of these different things. I think that sometimes we assume that everybody just sort of falls into comfort around these things that are actually very fraught sometimes, right? Like I grew up feeling very anxious. I grew up wanting to fit in, but also wanting to like shout my Blackness from the rooftops, but also not sure what my Blackness meant. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of work for me to get to a place where I just feel really good in my own skin. I feel really good when I'm dressed however I like to dress. If people don't get it, like that is completely fine with me. I, you know, love who I want to love. I live how I want to live. I say this because there was a time in my life when I was very young when I thought I would never feel this way, where I thought, like, I am just destined to always feel like I'm kind of living a lie. And if people look at me too hard, they're going to see something in me that I don't want them to see. I spent so much of my life thinking that a life of confidence and just feeling good about yourself wasn't in the cards for me. And it took a lot of work. And so if there's anybody out there listening now who deep down has these same hangups and anxieties, there is, like, it takes work. But there is happiness and like acceptance and peace on the other side, like for sure. And yeah, I'm happy that so many of us, I feel like right now, are walking in our peace and just being really happy about who we are and expressing that. And if people don't like it, they don't have to like it.
Listen, tell the whole damn truth. Yes. I'm so here for this. I really, you've got me thinking we do actually need a misfit Black girls agenda.
Yeah, what would be on the agenda?
You know, for me, I would just have one point, which would actually two. So my first point would be do what you like, right? Which is also a theme for this show. I'm not about policing how other people be in the world. And I think years and years and years of being the weird one and actually living through like when my weird wasn't cool and then also when my weird became cool, I'm like, look, I'm just out here trendsetting. So rule number one of the misfit Black girls agenda is do what you like and don't worry about what other people are going to think about what you're doing. Because the reality is what makes us unique is that we don't give a fuck. So there's that. And then the second one that I would put on my misfit Black girl agenda is related to do what you like, which is mind your business. So I have had so many instances where being a misfit means that people want to know how I got there. And I'm like, just know that I'm here now, right? Like, I don't want you to try to like psychoanalyze me. Oh, you must be a misfit because you grew up around white people. No, I don't think that's it. You must be a misfit because, you know, your parents were a different kind of black. No, I don't think that's it. It's just, this is my destiny in the world. This is who I was created to be at this moment, right here, right now. So I would say, yeah, agenda point number two is mind your business and figure out what is your misfit? You know what I mean?
I love that so much. I think that really, mind your business is a big one. That was something that I really, you know, I think I want to like that on a t-shirt for myself. You know, yes. So when I was like 14, 15, I really had a problem with adhering to that, right? Like I wanted people, when it came to me, to mind their business, but I often found myself minding other people's business. And so I remember like when black female rappers like Lil' Kim were really hot, people being like, oh, why can't there be more like Lauryn Hills? And I would really sort of think that, right? And then at the end of the day, it's like, well, she's doing her. They're all doing their own thing. Like, it doesn't have to be a competition. Like, there are so many different ways to be a black woman. And like, I was really, I had to learn that like, oh yeah, I don't have to police the way that other people feel comfortable expressing themselves. And it takes all kinds. And we're vast. Like, we're allowed to be Lauryn Hill one day and then Lil' Kim the next. And that's fine. Listen, we are vast.
I heard that. And sometimes minute to minute, because, you know, that's just how we do.
Exactly.
Obviously, we have to talk politics. I mean, sis, what is this weird state of affairs that we find ourselves in? There was an election, then there's maybe kind of sort of maybe going to be an election. Like, what is your take on where we're at in terms of the state of affairs in politics right now?
Oh, heavy sigh. It's so bad. I mean, this is a weird state for me to be in because I've been working in politics in some way, shape, or form for many years. And this is probably the first time that I've ever felt this sort of sense of, I don't want to say hopelessness. I've just never really felt this way before. And things have been bad for at least, especially for marginalized folks, for black folks, things have been bad for us before. But I can't remember a time where I just felt so kind of, I think I'm just tired. I'm just tired of these fights. And, you know, I'm someone who is Little Miss activist, like wants to be in the mix, all of that. And if I'm tired, I can't imagine how someone who has sort of just been casually checked in, how they feel. Like, if I'm feeling hopeless, how do they feel? They probably feel 10 times worse. And so, you know, anybody who, all you have to do is like turn on the TV or like open a newspaper to see that things are bad. And I think finding ways to still be hopeful, finding ways to feel powerful and to feel like you can make a difference, that's like a value that I have, right? That's in my bones. And so I guess I'm trying to remember that it doesn't have to be connected to what's in the paper or the news cycle, that that's something that like is inside of me. And so I need to reconnect with that in order to not feel completely hopeless, because otherwise I would just want to like lay down and die.
That's real. That's real, real, real. So we've been talking on the show for the last couple shows because I'm, of course, obsessed with blacks. And I am obsessed with the fact that we are in a major election season. And I feel like we have the playbook from like 2016 wide open, turned to the page of here's how you lose an election. So as a political strategist, you know how important black voters are to elections. Have you read this black agenda that made its way into our lives a week or so ago? And give me your takeaways.
So I don't think anyone will be surprised. I voted for Clinton in the last election.
Me too, girl. Me too.
Yeah, like I feel like I need to say
that. You gotta act like you gotta come out the closet. I voted for her too because I knew what the fuck time it was. I was like, okay, girl, I guess. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly.
We're in this thing.
I think that black folks, we have been making tough choices of candidates since forever. That's not the first time that we've had to do this. I hope that at some point we are not just finding ourselves choosing between bad and worse, because that's not democracy, right? I definitely think that we should all be voting in this upcoming election because it's like a harm reduction strategy, right? Like if we don't vote, I mean, it just, we have to. All of the things that people would say, like, oh, like neither party has our best interest at heart, all of that stuff. Yes, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. There are so many problems with our democracy. There are so many problems with our voting system, all of it. But we can't just stay home. We have to do this. And I think that if I could wave a magic wand and make the Democratic Party look like the party that is actually representative of who is in the party, right? Like, I'm talking about Black folks. Black and brown folks are the backbone of the party. We say that so much that it's almost a cliche, but it's true. And I think that we need to get to a point where it's not just a fantasy that a candidate will actually meaningfully center us and our issues, right? Like, we need to get to a point, and I think that it does take a little bit of, like, hope and a little bit of faith to imagine that that is possible. But I can tell you one thing, Donald Trump doesn't give a fuck if we live or die. He's out there killing our communities and going on TV and almost bragging about it. And so I can tell you that we can't afford another 4 years of this. So when I say we, I mean Bridget, I mean you, I mean folks listening. Like, this is not abstract. This is happening right now, right? Like, right now, our communities are being ravaged, I would say, damn near intentionally by coronavirus, and nothing is being done. Right. In Georgia, they are using this as we speak for Republicans to further grab power away from Black and brown voters after initially disenfranchising them to get Brian Kemp and all this in the first place. And so,
hello, tell the truth.
I'm not going to be someone who's going to say the Democratic Party has it all figured out and they're the best, blah, blah, blah. I would never say that. But I will say that, like, one party is actively trying to kill us, like, and talking about it pretty openly on TV. And that's just not okay with me.
I heard that. Okay, fair enough. I want to make sure that we talk about what your latest projects are, because it is not lost on me that you have 2 million listeners, and that's a big deal. That means you are giving people something to listen to. So give me a sense. What is it that you're curating during the time of the Rona?
Oh, what a good question. For me, I think that I'm interested in amplifying conversations that we're just sort of not having. I've been working on things that were important to me before coronavirus happened, particularly like amplifying stories of folks of color and women and trans folks, stories that we don't often hear, and how they're related to like domains that we think of as white men's domains. Mm-hmm. I would say more times than not, Black folks, queer folks, other marginalized voices have been at the forefront of those arenas since forever. We just don't talk about it. And so my new project is called There Are No Girls on the Internet. It's all about how women, marginalized voices, have actually been at the forefront of technology and computers and the internet since the very, very, very beginning. But yet, those voices and those stories are oftentimes erased. And, you know, as you know, like, we're the ones who are creating culture online. Like, if something is funny on the internet, usually there's a Black woman at the other end of it, right? And so it's wild to me that we still do not center our voices and our stories in those conversations about what's happening culturally online, even though we are the curators of that culture.
Period, period, period. Okay, so you talked earlier about, even though shit's fucked up, let's just keep it a buck, we have to find hope and we have to find inspiration to keep going. So where are you getting your inspiration from these days?
Oh, that's very easy. Young people, definitely young people.
Yes.
Like, I'm in my 30s, right? I think to be someone who is just graduating high school, someone who is in college right now, it takes so much bravery. I mean, this is a really scary, unprecedented time. Just to exist and be planning for your future at this time, I don't know what I would have been like if I was 18, 19, having to plan for my future during coronavirus. I really don't know how I would face that. And yet, an entire generation of young people put on their brave faces and do it every day. And so I really, you know, I sound so old, but I look at TikTok and I see these kids doing challenges where they get to just sort of like find joy and be themselves and explore themselves. And all I can think is how brave they are. And if I can be a little bit, like even just a fraction of how brave they are, if I can live that bravery myself, I think we'll all be okay.
That's awesome. I love that. Oh my gosh. Okay. You are excellent. And don't go anywhere because we are coming right back to you So just like that, it is time. Y'all know what we do and you know how we do it. I got some stuff to get off my chest this week, so bear with me. Here is the roundup of things that Lady just ain't gonna do this week. We are not gonna act like Black voters have gotten our fair share. So look, this week I had the honor and the pleasure of co-authoring an op-ed with my sisters, Angela Rye, Tiffany Cross, Latasha Brown, Brittany Packnett Cunningham, Amanda Seals, Sunny Hostin. I mean, look, this is like a dream team. And we discussed the need for a comprehensive Black agenda, as well as a commitment from the Biden campaign to select a Black woman as vice president and confirm a Black woman to the Supreme Court if elected. Why? Because Black women voters have been carrying these campaigns and this party for decades. Also, because to win elections, you need to energize voters to actually vote. What gets people to turn out who feel lackluster about a candidate? Talking with them about things that they care about. The news that the campaign was floating Amy Klobuchar as a top pick for VP, ostensibly to court white swing voters in the Midwest, let's just say it wasn't received well by Black women. Groups like Black Women's Roundtable and Higher Heights penned a letter to the campaign that a Black woman needed to be selected for vice president. My sisters and I joined them in that demand and took it a step further to say also that Black agenda you working with, it just ain't working. So here's the thing. We got so much good feedback from so many people. But of course, there's always the fearmongers who equate any demand for better and equal representation as handing a victory to someone else. So let me take this section just to say, y'all need to quit with that. Ultimately, we already saw the strategy to court white Midwestern swing voters as opposed to expand your base of people who already fuck with you. That strategy just doesn't work. It didn't work in 2016. Are we going to do the same thing this time around and expect different results? Also, there are Black voters in those states that need to be energized. But let's come back to that. Number two, Klobuchar couldn't pull Black voters in her own campaign. She wasn't interested, didn't really rock with it. So what makes y'all think she can energize the Black voters that Biden got in the primary, plus the additional Black voters that you need to win? Number three, the homie Frederick Douglass said, and he was right, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Black voters will and must continue to pressure the campaign and the party, frankly, to do right by us. We have waited for hope and change, and now here we are, and conditions are getting worse, not better. At what point do we say we are going to reward Black voters for our loyalty, we are going to reflect Black voters in our vision for a better America, and do the work to really move the needle for Black voters who time and time again show up to move the needle for you? And finally, politics is all about negotiation and compromise. If you're a voter and you passively accept whatever a campaign offers you, then that's exactly what you go get. But somebody who wants to represent you should do that. They should represent you. So last thing I'm going to say on this, because y'all got me all in my feelings now, Black voters deserve to win. And I worry every single day and every single night that this campaign is going to fuck that up for us, chasing after white voters who are unlikely to come back to you. When I say courting Black voters is a key component to a winning strategy, I mean it. And so let me say this very clearly. I want to win. I want us to win, and I need us to win. And I am wholly unwilling to sit back and watch the same mistakes from 2016 happen all over again. I can run down these receipts that we had last week about what voter turnout is looking like, but maybe I'll need to run that receipts episode back one more time to get back on track. If you don't energize Black voters, if you don't invest in Black voters, if you don't fight voter suppression of Black voters, if you don't give Black voters something to vote for rather than to vote against, you don't win the election. Period. Sorry, not sorry. We'll be back to our regular weekly roundup next week, but I needed to get all of that off my chest. And I needed to say it with my chest, too, because some of y'all got me fucked up. Moving on. Here's what we want more of this week, though. Number one is versus battles. I am here for them on principle and in practice, and I love being taken back to all of the songs that shaped my whole entire life. I really do need us, though, the original people of hip-hop, to get with the program on this sound stuff, though, and the Wi-Fi. Get with the Wi-Fi, please, and thank you. Number two, speaking of thank you, can we get a collective shout out to Stevie Wonder and his mama for giving birth to him? That's right. Stevie Wonder turned 70 last week, and we got a full 24 hours of Stevie hits on Instagram. Thank you, Stevie, for giving us all of this beautiful music. Number three, Black churches who feed the people test the people rather than mislead the people. Now, look. There was recently some clown-ass controversy when a local Oakland church leader threatened to defy stay-at-home orders and gather his parishioners. To help him, he brought in a religious leader who says he's an ex-gay, spreading the gospel to others to become ex-gays, and also changed the political habits of churches across the state. Now, we're sensitive about people who ain't from here trying to move stuff here, but nonetheless, I talked with Pastor McBride today, and he had some sage words for the kid. Let's uplift the leaders who are actually getting things done. And so to that end, we about that life. First Woman Jackie at Allen Temple Baptist Church is providing testing for the Rona Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So head over there and get your swab on. Oakland Mount Zion Church is providing food and masks from Mass for the People on Fridays. So go over there and get your swab on and also get your mask on. Beth Eden in West Oakland is providing food and testing. And St. John Baptist in West Oakland is providing food, toilet paper, and all the things on Tuesdays from 12 to 2. As Pastor Mike would say, touch your neighbor. Lady loves community institutions who are actually about the community. Moving on. And lastly this week, Lady loves Black agendas with some teeth. Look, I'm about to toot my own horn because it's my show and I can do what I want. One thing about Lady, and specifically Lady from the Bay, is that we don't just talk about it, we be about it. So when I go the hell off on what a Black agenda needs to look like, my team actually did that work. Our Black agenda is based off of the Black Census Project that we conducted in 2018, the largest survey of Black communities in America in 155 years. We took that data and translated it into a Black agenda that took the best of what our survey respondents said they wanted to see for their futures. That's right. The best of what 30,000 Black people across age, gender, geography, and political affiliation said that they wanted to see done to improve Black folks' lives. Already, more than 20,000 Black voters have said, this is the agenda for me. So, we need and we love a Black agenda that speaks real talk to our people about what is needed to change our lives. And we like a Black agenda that doesn't rely on platitudes, but is instead focused on changing results. We're still waiting for our phone to ring over here because our calls have gone unanswered, but that's another topic for another show. In the meantime, if you want to check out the Black Agenda, visit black2thefuture.org and check out our socials to find out how you can help. Okay, we have reached the end of our show. But I will be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. Thank you, Bridget, for joining us. Tell the good people who are listening where they can connect with you on the socials.
You can find me on Twitter at Bridget Marie. You can find me on Instagram at Bridget Marie in DC. And also, please check out that report. The census work that you're doing for the Black Census is earth-shattering, and everyone needs to check it out.
Oh, love you. Love you. And also, don't sleep on Bridget's IG. Honestly, it's one of the highlights of my day every single day because, you know, that's what we doing during the Rona. Okay. So that's all for Lady Don't Take No. We appreciate you joining us and we hope to see you back next week. Please connect with us and let us know what's on your mind. What do you like? And what don't you want to take no more of? On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook, and you can find us, Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things that you hear on this show on our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. Please subscribe, write us a review, and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. And I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, misfit Black girls are magic. Quarantine is going to produce some of the best cultural works in a decade. We play zero games when it comes to getting Black voters what we deserve. And we come with receipts. Always and in all ways. That's right, I said it, because Lady Don't Take No.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a woman is. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so seriously, people stare curiously. She got a natural way, her hips sway furiously, get luxuriously. There is a self.
Love y'all.